Today is Thursday, September the 12th, 2019. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's Shir on Parshas Ki Tetzé.
Please take your cell phones and please silence them, please.
Vibrate them.
Pinchas, how do you say vibrate?
Vibrate.
Yeah. Whatever Pinchas said, try to do that.
Thank you, Jenny. I don't care.
That was a very dangerous statement.
I know that some people expected to be nochek tonight, and I just wanted to fool everybody. No, really.
I was fooled.
I want to tell you something. I was fooled too.
The reverse is not so bad. I mean, this is not so bad. The reverse would be bad.
That's right. But in any case, I thought that we were milchik last week, and I guess I was wrong. But were we milchik last week?
Yes. No. We were.
So I want to record it that Mr. Turney made a mistake. I'd like to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos tomorrow night. And we're going to be davening tomorrow, just in a matter of a couple of minutes after the class ends. At the end of the class, please clean off the tables, leave the tablecloths on. And I'd like to thank Young Israel of Northbrook for their generosity, for setting up the tables, for allowing us to have this wonderful class with Rabbi Soloveitchik. Week in and week out, whether I'm around, whether I'm not around, the class seems to continue on, which is wonderful. And I just would like to thank Rabbi Berger for all of his kindnesses and generosity. We have a couple of birthdays this week. Yitzi Gafman and Rebitson Karsh, Zippy, and if you don't know it, we have a nice birthday cake in case you'd like to celebrate with us. Should I mention anything about?
There is a very good possibility that I will not be in town next Thursday. So next Thursday there won't be a shir. But the following Thursday, the Thursday before Rosh Hashanah, B'li Nether, there will be a shir.
Okay.
So that's...
We've got to be melting in 2 weeks.
It all depends on if I get confused again.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
I don't know which way is which, though. Okay. I was thinking about what to talk in Perek Chafei. The Torah talks about the laws of Yibum and Chalitza. Yibum is not practiced today, at least in Ashkenazic communities. Actually, in Sephardic communities, it is practice. But the way the law is mentioned in the Torah, Ki Yeshvu, Achim Yachtav, the two brothers, and one died, and the one who died didn't have any children, So the custom, very often what would happen would be, even though generally a person is prohibited from marrying his sister-in-law, but where the brother died without having any children, so there is a mitzvah yibum. The wife of the deceased brother who didn't have children marries the brother, the living brother, the surviving brother. But what happens if the person says, I can't marry her? So there is a whole ceremony. A number of times I've been at the, it's called the chalitza ceremony. And they take off the shoe, and the woman spits at the shoe. Spits, yeah. That's actually what they do. Anyway, and
they don't spit in it. They spit at it.
And it's a special type of shoe. It's not your regular shoe. She says, she says, my brother-in-law refuses to establish a name for his brother in Israel, and he did not consent to perform the levirate marriage with me. So this is, today, in Ashkenazi communities, we do chalitza, we do not do yibam. Similar, not exactly. Similar to gerushin, but it's not exactly that. And in the Sephardic communities, they still do yibum at times in the Sephardic communities. Rabbi Avad Yosef, from what I'm told, was a proponent of doing yibum to keep the custom going in the Sephardic communities. The question is, what is the significance? I'm not focusing on yibum and chalitza per se, but what is the significance of the idea of him having his shoe, takes his shoe off, or the shoe is taken off, I should say, and she removes the shoe, actually. And what's the idea of the shoe? What is the symbolism? What is the symbolism of the shoe? Now, I heard from my father that the shoe more than anything else. Now, you have to understand, today everybody wears shoes. Unfortunately, they're not alive anymore, but many. When I talk to the Jews, the pre-war generation in Europe, not everybody in Europe had shoes. Shoes was not as common as it is today. What is the significance of shoes? Shoes, my father said, represents adaption, adaptation. In other words, when you don't have shoes, you walk on the ground, there could be all kinds of things on the ground. There could be pebbles, there could be stones. But shoes gives a person the ability of adaptation, adapting to the environment. And when a person doesn't have shoes, there is a certain degree of discomfort. He has to be careful where he walks and whatever it is. So the brother who refuses, my father said, the brother who refuses to marry his sister-in-law, so it'd be difficult within the perspective from a contemporary perspective, but in other words, he wants to He wants to be very comfortable. He doesn't want any hardships. He doesn't even have to give reasons. Mine, he just, me ain't Yavami. She says, me ain't means to just absolutely refuse, not necessarily with rational reasons. So the idea of the shoe, that represents adaptation. Matter of fact, the brothers of Yosef, the Medrash says, when they sold Yosef, now the Medrash doesn't have to be taken literally, it's based on a pasuk in the Nevi'im. What did they do with the money that they got when they sold Yosef? And on the basis of the pasuk, Al Michram Bakesef Tzadik Ba'avur Na'alayim, they sold the righteous person because of shoes. For shoes. What does it mean, shoes? In other words, having Joseph around, who to a certain degree was the one that received the attention of Yaakov, because he was the son of Rachel, who passed away. So Yaakov felt a special obligation, and the brothers resented the special relationship that Yaakov had with Yosef. Whether Yaakov acted properly in that special relationship or not, you know, there could be discussion. But there was this jealousy. There was a certain jealousy they had. And Yosef's presence made things uncomfortable for the brothers of Yosef. They could have gone on, as they recognized later on, when we all recognize that we make mistakes. They could have gone on, and okay, things would have been a little less comfortable. Or they could have changed their perspective of what is considered comfortable and what is not considered comfortable. You know, sometimes we believe that the easiest way, that's the most comfortable way. But sometimes when we look back, it's not that way. Sometimes it becomes the hardest way. So the brothers of Yosef, Al Michram Bakesef Tzadik Ba'avur Na'alayim, they sold their brothers, the Medrash says, for money in order to purchase shoes. It doesn't mean literally that they purchased shoes, but in shoes was the symbol of comfort. In other words, shoes was an absolutely necessary garment, but it offered opportunity to just easily walk without looking, without being careful. So, Amichram Bakesef Tzadik Ba'avur Na'alayim, shoes represented this perspective. And sometimes it's more, at least we think, it's more comfortable to get rid of certain people because they're a source of problems for us. Not of real problems, but they make it a little uncomfortable. And adaptation is the idea of comfort. And many years ago, with the Orthodox shuls, some of them were beginning to take off, and that would take it out. That was a trend that existed, started probably in the 40s in Orthodox shuls, and it stretched till the 60s. But then the trend was reversed. But there was a trend, even among Orthodox shuls, in taking out the mechitza. And at that time, people said the reason those who advocated taking down the mechitza, because, you know, it's much more comfortable when the family prays together. Now, believe me, I'm in favor of families praying together. I am not happy with the trend that everybody in the family goes to a different shul. They have shuls for those below 20, and shuls for those below 30, and shuls below whatever it is. I think that's unfortunate. I might get into that a little bit later, but that time, those who advocated taking out the mechitza, they were talking about being comfortable in shul. And of course, when we have the family, when the husband and wife sit together, there's a certain degree of comfort. And at that time, my uncle said that on the contrary, when you come before God, you cannot be motivated by comfort. There has to be fear and trepidation. The shul represents the coming to the place of God. The shul is a mikdash ma'at. So one cannot be motivated by comfort. And it's very interesting. When Moshe came on holy grounds, God said, went by the burning bush, Shal ni alecha me'al raglecha ki amokam asher ata omeid alav ad maskodeshu. When you deal with holy grounds, now comfort is very important, I'm not arguing, but when you deal with holy issues, with holy grounds, you can't be motivated, you cannot be motivated by comfort. So that's the symbolism that Moshe was told to take off his shoes because of the presence of God that was there. So, my uncle said that when you come to shul, the motivating criteria, knows you're not coming to shul, you're not coming to shul for entertainment. Entertainment really should be done with the family together. I mean, you know, I'll tell you, I think it's somewhat sad and somewhat funny. I remember years ago, that they used to talk against having a television in the house. By the way, we had a television in the house, so we had a television in the house, and now you walk into a house, many of the Orthodox homes, there's no television, but everybody is on their own computer. Now, what was the difference? The difference was that when you had a television in the house, very often all the kids sat together and watched the, with the parents, watching the television together. But once they got rid of the television and they got the computers, in a sense, there's a certain sense of lack of family. It's each person for themselves. So, this is, of course, you have to be careful what you watch on TV. You know, there's a lot of harm with telephones also. But a person has to know what to say and who you're talking with. But the sense of family, the sense is important. It's important. But when you're dealing with unholy grounds, you can't be motivated by comfort. In your house, you can't be motivated by comfort. But when you deal with that which is holy, and when there's a specific obligation, when there is a special need, then you can't be motivated by comfort. You have to consider and evaluate the need that is there. And sometimes we have a lack of sensitivity for others because we're motivated by what we consider to comfort our own comfort. And when we're motivated by what we consider our own comfort, then we do not recognize the sense of obligation that we have. And that's the thing by Yibam. When we come to holy grounds, that's true. And also when it comes to obligation, one cannot be motivated by comfort. You have to recognize the obligation, the moral obligation that people have. And so this is, and I want to point out something in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei. Now, and I'm just mentioning we're now approaching the days of Slichus. And I mentioned that in Europe there was a saying in Europe that in Elul the fish in the brooks are shivering. Why were the fish in the brooks shivering? Okay, a change of weather. But why were they shivering? It's not that they were shivering, but the Jews in Europe were shaking. When you shake, it appears to you that the whole world is shaking. You know, it's interesting. There's a pasuk in the Navi, Aryeh Yishag Milo Yira. And when the lion roars, who is not scared? And when you hear the roar of a lion, everybody's scared. The Balei Musar, I'm not from the big advocates of Musar, but every once in a while, there's an interesting thought. The Aryeh, they would say, stands for Elul, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom HaKippurim. Aryeh Yishag, when you hear the roar, this is what people said in Europe, when you hear the roar of the lion being Elul, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom HaKippurim, Milo Yira, who doesn't get scared? In matter of fact, my cousin, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, besides being a great Talmud Chacham, he is probably the greatest Jewish historian alive today. So he writes that when he was a boy, European Jews in America, who weren't observant, he says when they came to shul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, they were crying. Because they had this sense that everything is dependent upon their prayers. They were used to living in a town where there was pogroms from time to time. And they had no control over those situations. And the only control was Avinu Shebashamayim, our God in heaven, our Father in heaven. So they were used to the idea of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim when they were asking for the new year. They were overcome with fear and trepidation. And these were Jews that were not observant. Now, Rav Unterman, who was the chief rabbi of Israel, he writes, it was an interesting article, a short article. So for a short while, he was the chief rabbi. Before he came to Israel, he became the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. But before he came to Israel, before he became chief rabbi of Israel, he was a chief rabbi of some town in England. And this was before the war. And the European Jews that were in the town, they came to him and they said, when we were in Europe, when we were in the Shtetlach, so when El came, Rosh Hashanah came, Yom Kippurim came, we were overcome with fear and trepidation. And here, in England, in this town of in England, this city in England, we don't sense that same fear, that same trepidation. And they phrased as this, is there no Aryeh here in England? Is there no lion? Is there no Elul, no Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippurim? Because if there's Elul, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippurim, there has to be fear. They couldn't imagine Elul, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippurim without fear. So Rav Unterman said, very smart answer. He said, you know, when you're out in the jungle and you hear the sound of a lion, you get scared. He says, but when you're in a zoo and you hear the sound of the lion, you don't get scared because the lion is behind the bars in the cage. He says, in England there's also Elul, Shana, and Yom Kippurim. He says, but they're behind bars, they're in a cage. What does that mean? People go to a zoo. To a certain degree, they're going for entertainment. Why do you go to a zoo? Why do people go to a zoo? They want to relax. They want to be entertained. They want to see something different. So, So, in America also, to a large degree, I'm not talking, I see people that fake cry. The fake crying is worse than no crying. Listen, I'm not on the level. I don't cry. El Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim. I should, but I don't. The Gros says Rosh Hashanah you shouldn't cry. Okay. But the facts are, we just don't have those same feelings. We imagine to ourselves that we are secure. But the truth of the matter is, we're not so secure. We see every day there's another lunatic with a gun. Years ago, we didn't have that. There's a false, America has a false sense of security. And we're seeing it more and more. We're just not used to it. So we don't feel that fear and trepidation. Everybody is scared, you know, they're scared when they go to shul. They're scared for the wrong reasons. But let me tell you something. It's not just the school. It's not just the shul. It's the public schools. Probably there was more shooting in the public schools. More shooting in the stores. More shooting at the entertainment centers than the war in the synagogues and churches. There is a total, we just don't sense the insecurity that we have. And ultimately, and I want to tell you, in almost all these places, you have people, you had the doors locked, and you have guards, and you had people with guns, and all that. If you check out every shul that, and probably every church also, but I don't know, that some lunatic went in and started shooting. It was locked. The shuls all had guards, and they were the first ones to be shot. So, and we have a guard in our shul also. But the truth of the matter is, the guard only makes you feel more secure. It doesn't make the situation be secure. So I have to shoot through the window. Okay. We're fooling ourselves. Ultimately, everything is dependent. Our only security, I'm not saying not to take measurements of security. We should take measurements of security. I guess if a person has a choice between shooting people in one place and another place, and one place has a guard, he'll say, okay, I might as well go into the other door. But there is a false sense of security that we have in America. We don't feel the fear. So Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippurim, like in England in the 1940s, it's behind bars. So we don't feel the fear. We don't feel the fear. We have to know that when we come to Elul, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippurim, our lives are at stake. And what we have to realize that the decisions that are made during these days, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim, that is going to affect the rest of the year. So this is, in other words, Elul Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim cannot be just a question of entertainment. You know, many of the, in the old days, today it's not that way, but many of the synagogues in the old days would hire all kinds of singers to lead the services, and people who, from the perspective, you know, when you appoint an ambassador, when you appoint an ambassador to approach, of course you want him to be somebody that makes a good impression, and the way he looks and all of that. But ultimately, you want an ambassador that knows how diplomacy works. And when we approach God, we need someone who knows how heavenly diplomacy works. So, in other words, it can't be just another concert, another source of entertainment, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim. That's putting Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim behind bars. So when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippurim, can't be motivated by comfort. Where can you be motivated by comfort? When it comes to your house. There you can be motivated by comfort, and there you should. Because that doesn't mean that you have to build these houses that they have in Peterson Park that make some hotels look small. But the Torah tells us in Parshas Ki Tsetse, there's two mitzvahs mentioned in the Torah here. Ki Sivna Bayis Chadash, when you build a new house, Vasisa Makala Gagecha, you'll make a parapet or a fence around the roof. Philosasim Damin Bebesecha, and do not place something that will cause bloodshed in your house. Ki Yipol Hanofel Mimenu, when somebody falls, might fall from it. Now, so there are two separate mitzvahs, one a positive commandment and one a negative commandment. The positive commandment is that the way the Torah prescribes it, when you build a house, you put a fence around the roof. Now, some say that only applied to the houses in those days, because the houses in those days, people spent a lot of time on the roofs of their houses. Today, there is a tshuva of the Beis Yosef that the Ma'bit brings down. Today, no one actually, although I read in the newspapers that downtown they're building all kinds of gardens on their roof. But putting that aside, you don't see today people entertaining themselves, unless it's a school building. You don't see people entertaining themselves on a regular basis on the roofs of the houses. But in the old days, they did that. So they were required, and it was a mitzvah, and it's a mitzvah that we make a brach on. We're required to put a fence around the roof. And a house means a house. The Gemara tells us of four amos by four amos. An amma is anywhere between 18 and 24 inches. So it could be 8 feet by 8 feet, according to the biggest opinion. Or it could be 6 feet by 6 feet. But the Gemara says, from the Sefri says, from Losasim Damim Veisecha, we learn out that let's say you have a pit, or you have a ditch, or you have any dangerous thing. You have a ladder that is weak, or you have a bad dog. That I'm using the expression of the Gemara. So you have to either fix the ladder or get rid of the bad dog, whatever it is. And that's learned out from the negative commandment, Lo sasim damim beveisecha. Don't have something that will cause bloodshed in your domain. Now it's very interesting, the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvos, when he talks about the positive commandment, he limits it to a person's house and his courtyard. The positive commandment, and the Rambam says the positive commandment is, one hand, putting a fence around the roof and covering up, or putting a fence around the ditches and the pits that you have in your courtyard. And then when it comes what is true about the positive commandment is true about the negative commandment. And what we deduce from the negative commandment applies to the positive commandment also. But from the Rambam and the Sefer Mitzvahs, it seems there's one difference. When it comes to the positive commandment, that applies to your courtyard and it applies to your house. When it comes to the negative commandment, in addition to your house, you have to have, it applies to your lands, whose responsibility of the community, of the Bezdin. The first mission in Shkolim says that after the rainy season, it's too bad that the mayor of Chicago doesn't learn Maseches Shkolim, that after the rainy season, the Bezdin would have to go out to check the roads because the roads become dangerous. So from the perspective of the positive commandment, it applies to your house and to your courtyard. And in respect to the negative commandment, it applies to the commute, not just to your house and courtyard, yes, but it also applies to the community, to the roads it applies. And the question is, if what's true about one is true about the other, why doesn't the positive commandment also apply to the roads? And the answer is, if you take a look at the Pasuk says, when it talks a positive commandment, it doesn't say anything about bloodshed. It just says, make a fence around the roof. But when it talks about the negative commandment, Lo sasim damim beveisecha, do not place blood in your house. There it talks about danger. In other words, what's the idea? The truth of the matter is, when in those days when people were on the roof, they were careful. When you have a ditch, you're not always so careful. You can fall into a ditch. When it comes to the positive commandment, is based on the understanding. It's not just a question of removing the danger. In other words, when you're on a roof, you tend to be careful. When there's a ditch, you're not so careful. When the roads a person is on guard. That's the word. A person is on guard when he's on his roof. When a person climbs a tree, to a certain degree, he's on guard. Why a tree is also a dangerous thing, but you're on guard when you do it. And when you're in those days, when they used the roof, they were on guard. But nevertheless, the Torah said you have to put fence around the roof. Why? Because the Torah said, in your house, you need to be comfortable. In your house, you shouldn't have to be on guard all the time. The house has to be built in a manner that one shouldn't have to every second worry what's going to happen. A house can't be a house. A house has to be a home. If you're constantly on guard, it's just so it's a house. It's not a home. So that only applies to your courtyard and to your the positive commandment applies only to the courtyard and to your house, because it's not just that we're removing the danger. We're removing the necessity of being on guard. But when it comes to the roads, there it's a question of just removing the danger. So you don't have to be comfortable. Roads weren't made for comfort. A house, a home, that's made for comfort. So when the Rambam talks about the roads, that's only in the negative commandment. There it talks to sasim damim beveisecha. Do not be. You have to be on guard. You have to remove things that can cause tragedy from the road. But in the house, even if you'll be on guard. And it wouldn't be a problem, but in a house, you have to. A home has to be a place that you don't have to constantly be on guard. That's the difference. So a home, there's a difference between a shul and a house. A house was made for comfort. A shul is made to feel close to God. So, when it comes to a shul, one can't be motivated by the comfort. Okay, we don't take our shoes off when we go to a shul, but in the Beis Hamikdash, the Jews, the halachic requirement was that you had to take your shoes off before you went to the Beis Hamikdash, because the Beis Hamikdash represents holy ground. And when it comes to holy ground, you can't be motivated by comfort. An Avel doesn't wear shoes because shoes is the sign of comfort. A mourner doesn't wear shoes; it's a sign of comfort. You're not when you're overcome with tragedy, you're not motivated. You shouldn't be motivated by comfort. Those are times when on the contrary. Comfort plays the least, should play the least role in your thinking.
Is that what we don't wear leather?
Okay. That's right. So not wearing leather shoes was identified with that. By the way, Rav Yashuv, at least in, I think in regard to Tishra for Yom Kippur, I forgot which one, he applied it to regular even with some types of shoes that weren't made out of leather. But okay, but the simple tradition is leather shoes. In other words, when it comes to holiness, you don't wear shoes. Why don't you wear shoes? Because when it comes to holiness, you can't be motivated by comfort. When it comes to your house, comfort plays a major role. You can't treat the shul like it was your home. But even your home, you have to recognize there's a difference between the home and the shul.
Okay, so I'd like to thank everybody for coming. Just beat off the tables. And I want to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos for Shabbos.
3 minutes.
And we're going to be meeting in the Tadavin in 3 minutes.